Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Wessex Safety Hour conference call. During the presentation, your lines will be on listen only. If you require assistance at any time, just key star zero on your telephone and a coordinator will be happy to assist you. I would like to advise all parties this conference is being recorded. And now I'd like to hand over to your host today, Nigel Wheeler. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello everybody. It's Nigel Wheeler here. I'm the RAM for EMP for Wessex Route. Okay, so having a look at the safety hour material for this week. Safety hour, so last week 71%, which is another great week, which is fantastic. We just need to keep up that sort of rate of people attending and listening to safety hour. And the key thing is actually it's having the conversations. It's about talking about the talking about safety, highlighting issues, so that we can actually, you know, raise awareness and actually hopefully take some actions out of that all as well. There were also 79 close calls. So I don't have the stats how many were closed in that particular week. So just going through some incidents from last week. Waterloo, a member of Clapham P Way working for Works Delivery within their worksite, was struck by a pandrel clip on the ankle. The pandrel clip had apparently been dislodged by a spanner coming into contact with it and struck the injured party, who was looking in the other direction at the time. The injured party was treated on site and taken to hospital. Scans have shown the ankle is broken, so it's a lost time injury. I believe there's some inquiries, some investigations into that, and possibly some, effectively, some reconstructions that will take place into that. We also had a member of staff turning out a Winchester station car park in a network rail van. The offside rear of the van caught the side of a low barrier alongside the car park exit. It dented the vehicle slightly, but no injuries. Okay, so just remembering everybody, driving is one of our more risky activities in terms of the number of incidents that's taking place in it. So another one, a high top van clipped a network rail vehicle side mirror and front bumper when trying to merge in front of the roundabout. The network rail vehicle was stationary at the time, so it was queuing to get onto the A3 at Guildford. No injuries in that one as well. So out of the three incidents, two of them were driving. Thankfully, no injuries, and thankfully, if you like, no other people, you know, no other personal injuries involved in it. Okay, so out of our accident statistics, there are three items: driving, slip, trips and falls, and manual handling. And actually, slip, trips and falls is one of the bigger ones still. So 41% of lost time injuries are caused by slips, trips and falls. There's been a little bit of statistics that have been looked into these slip, trips and falls. And the three highest ones are slip, trips and falls on rails, sleepers, stairs. Although there's a whole list of other causes, if you like, such as ballast, embankments, equipment, straps, troughing, and other elements. Okay, so it's something that is a concern for us all. Part of it is about the tidiness of sites. So just bear with me a second. So, and part of it is obviously where when it's there's wet or there's materials around. There's a whole spread of how those slips, trips and falls are occurring. So actually I think one of the key things on here is when people are out and about, actually looking and being aware of where there are conditions that can lead to slip, trips and falls, be it debris, be it slippery surfaces, equipment that's left lying around, and actually seeing if we can do something about it. Obviously we've got the scrap recovery program that's being run from Works Delivery, but it's all the ongoing additional new stuff as well. Ballast bags, anything that blocks cesses. So it's just something I think we need to be constantly vigilant at. Okay, so I don't know if people have seen it, but there's also a presentation from Network Rail, which is about slips, trips and falls, and I'll just pick out the highlights from the presentation. It's probably worth looking at if you can see it on your computer in front of you. So for Network Rail, 48% of last year's riddle accidents were slips, trips and falls. So this year the slips, trips and falls have been less serious or resulted in less serious injuries, but the number of accidents has been the same. So it's people coming out of vehicles. So overall there were 185 slip, trips and falls injuries. So that's where people have actually gone over on their ankles, hurt themselves, as part of the slip, trip or fall. So we've just talked about getting out of vehicles. Take care stepping out of your vehicle. Be wary what you're stepping onto. There are some surfaces that can be quite slippy. Obviously when you're moving and when you're coming out, you might only be on one leg or one foot. Stay focused on, have a look, keep aware of where you are. Take extra care where it's slippery and wet. Obviously, there are certain surfaces that get more slippery when it's wet. Always step ballast to ballast. So it's this thing on the PTS training where it's always trained to go ballast to ballast, not on sleepers, and not especially on not wooden sleepers, because they can get very slippery. And walking up and down stairs where, it's a case of using, where possible, used handrails to hold on to. And of course we've got thing of close calls. If a set of steps are either too steep or they're in poor condition, then they should be raised as a concern. Another one that's also been in the press a little bit is one which is walking and talking on mobiles, where you can get distracted, you can walk into things, you can miss things that are on the floor. So be very aware of that. And then there's just a summary at the end. So take care while stepping out of your vehicle. Stay focused. Take extra care when it's slippery and wet. Always step from ballast to ballast when you're out on the track. Always use the handrail and don't walk and talk at the same time. And that's especially, I guess, relating to mobiles, where people can get particularly distracted. Okay. There's also some other publications and some other posters and little booklets that are available about slips, trips and falls. So generally the leaflets labelled up, "Don't let bad habits break you." And it's really talking about the same things we just highlighted, with a few sort of case studies, if you like, or examples where there are sort of people that have actually had slips, trips and falls, such as when I actually heard my ankle snap. That was the worst bit, where a guy had been walking along without tying up their laces properly and tripped over. So I think it's worth having a look at that presentation if you can, or getting hold of those leaflets to use at team meetings. And there's also a poster, which is also available, which again is titled with the title "Don't Let Bad Habits Break You," with a picture of a guy falling over. With the thing on the end, it's the little things like not stepping ballast to ballast that caused 700 slips, trips and falls in our industry since 2008. So why chance it when it's so easy to stop a nasty accident. Okay. And then just generally there's some information on Validium. Validium is the provider of the healthcare for Network Rail, provides a counselling service, provides information on all sorts of matters throughout various items. So there are a number of there's a helpline number to call for information. So there's all sorts of continuing the theme of mental health as well. So I don't plan to go through that necessarily because there's quite a lot of information on that. But I think it's worth having a look. If you are aware of people or in the team meetings, talk about the free phone number or the contact numbers or the online support for Validion. They provide a whole load of useful confidential services for Network Rail. Okay, so that's all the information that is actually on the system for Safety Hour material for this week. I'm aware of an incident that took place with some lighting columns that I'm sure will be part of the briefing for next week. I've certainly sent it out to the EMP maintenance teams, and I can certainly answer any queries if there's anything out there. So if people would like, let's opening up the lines to see if there's any other items that people specifically want to discuss today.
Thank you, Nigel. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question or participate, please just key star, then one on your telephone, record your name, then press the hash key. All questions will be answered in the order received, and you'll be advised when to ask your question. All other lines will remain on listen only. So just to remind you, if you wish to ask a question or participate, please key star, then one on your telephone, record your name, and press the hash key. Thank you. Nothing's coming through at the moment, so let me just remind you, if you do wish to ask a question, just key star, then one on your telephone, record your name and press the hash key. Thank you. Nothing's coming through at the moment, Nigel.
Right, okay. Just give it another minute. And in fact, do you want to put me back on? I'll just talk about just something else briefly, and then we'll call it a day.
So we actually do have a question that's just come in.
Nigel. Okay.
Okay, we haven't got the caller's name, so please go ahead. You're live in the call. Your phone may be on mute, caller. Thank you.
Hello, yes, it's Ivan Kimball. Just wanted to make a couple of comments and then ask a question of you, Nigel, if that's okay.
Yeah.
The first thing is just making a note that I think it's bands 1 to 5 were asked to put forward their personal safety plan, and we've had 335 plans have been put in. With 1,151 action plans been actions as part of those plans. So that's 335 plans, safety, personal safety plans have been submitted, which is fantastic. And that's each one of them as a personal plan from 335 people, what they're going to do to improve, try and improve safety, in particular lost time accidents. From a personal point of view, so it's very personal. People were asked to do that by John Horsall and co, and 335 have done it, which is fabulous. So thank you very much, all those 335, and if there's one or two others who've still got to submit, if you can actually submit so that we can learn from those, that'd be fabulous, and then we've got to start on the actions, and I know there's some fabulous actions out there to try and personalise the improvement in terms of safety, holding one another to account, which doesn't mean beating one another around the head with a big stick. It means you know, have you done your safety tour or have you had your safety hour? Because it's really important. We all need that. Everybody needs that. So that's really great. Just wanted to say thank you for all those who've done that. That's sort of bands 1 to 5. So that's, I suppose that's managers in effect. And they're all being shared. The other thing I wanted to ask, Nigel, can you briefly tell us how we should put on a short-circuiting strap, the process? Just talk us through it. I don't think that's putting you on the spot too much, but I think it's always good, because you're the EMP RAM and the font of all knowledge of EMP. I just, if you just talk us through putting on a short-circuiting strap and the key steps. And I'm sure somebody out there will correct if they think you've missed something out if you do it on purpose. Can you do that, Nigel?
Yeah, sure. And I will make a mistake in there somewhere along the line. So people, you know, keep alert and tell me where you spot it. Okay. So I think the key thing on this is to make sure that we've got the live line testing devices. One of the key aspects of this is making sure and carrying out the test before touch part of the activity. And the reason I want to talk about this first before I talk about the actual process of fitting the strap is that the really important part of it is making sure that anyone who's got one of those live line testers also has a proving unit. So one of the key differences between the live line tester and the old box of eggs, as it was called, or the conductor rail test lamp set, is that it's got the ability to be tested on a test source before you make contact with the conductor rail. Now, the reason that's important is to prove the device is working before you use it, and then can also confirm after you've tested to make sure that the device is still operational. So obviously, if when we use a test device, the lights don't show up, it could be because there's no volts present, it could be because the device is actually broken, which is why it's important to use the test device. And of course the advantage of the new equipment is that you don't need to have a live conductor rail alongside you to actually test the device. So even if you're in the middle of the isolated area and there's nothing live around you, you can actually use the test device actually on the proving unit to actually prove the live line detector is actually still operational. So I think that's really important, and it's something that we just need to make sure that we always use and we take with us. And I get the fact it's another piece of equipment to take. I have seen people have it where it's actually tied, you know, it's part of their belt. And it's not particularly big and bulky, but it is a key piece of kit to take with us. So moving on to actually fitting the strap, I guess the important thing is the amount of equipment that's actually needed to carry out this task. So there's the short circuit strap itself, there's the live line tester, there's the proving unit, short circuit bar, gauntlets, and the wire brush. So effectively, the first thing to do is to get to a location that's been identified on the plan to fit short circuit straps. Now, again, one thing I will mention on here is we are trialling, I don't know if anybody has seen them, we are trialling what's called a designated strapping point, which is an identified sign that's fitted to the sleeper with a unique number on it, and it's got the road name and the mile of chains, which are those locations that we most commonly fit short circuit straps. So the reason we're doing that is to try and make it much more straightforward for people that are out on site doing strapping to actually identify where they are, that they're at the right miles and chains, they're at the right location, the right side of any substation gap, for example, and they're on the right road. So that is something at the moment we've got under trial at places such as Basingstoke on the country end of the station, and we've got some around Hampton Court Junction. So we will, once we've finished going through stakeholder, making sure we don't have any queries from our stakeholders and stakeholders engagement, including TOCs, train drivers, FOX, etc., we are aiming to roll that out throughout all of the locations that where there are regular points where we carry out short circuit strapping. And one of the reasons that's really important is that there are times where the line side markers down the side of the track are either not visible, and so it's interpretation of where you are. And actually, once we've fitted these plates on the track, it will become absolutely obvious where the actual short circuit strap should be fitted. So to me, once we get to that location, the first thing to do is to test the conductor rail, if the permission has been given to actually test and start applying the short circuit straps through the ES. So once that's been issued, test to make sure you're in the right place in terms of testing the conductor rail, fit the two running rail clamps to the running rails, apply the short circuit bar. Now again, this is really, really important. So even if you've tested that the conductor rail is de-energized, what the short circuit bar does is, if for whatever any reason that conductor rail becomes re-energized, it forms the short circuit to, first of all, trip out the circuit breakers in the substations to de-energize the conductor rail again, but also it also makes sure there's no dangerous voltages on the conductor rail at that particular location. So it's really important that the short circuit bar is applied. Once the short circuit bar is in place, then the bottom of the conductor rail can be cleaned by the brush, and of course the same with the running rails actually before those parts were fitted. And with the short circuit bar applied, to actually apply the clamp to the conductor rail. Again, really key thing is that all the clamps need to be really, really tight. So flat bottom rail, it's quite easy to really tighten them nice and tight. Now the reason that's important is that when the conductor rail, if the conductor rail is inadvertently re-energized, the short circuit strap will actually provide the short circuit for to protect the conductor rail. It will actually have short circuit current flowing through it. If the clamps are actually fitted and they're loose, the danger is they will actually blow off. If they actually blow off, for example, the conductor rail or the running rails, then effectively we don't have a short circuit strap at that location, and the conductor rail can either be live or can then subsequently be made live. So it's really, really important and critical that the actual clamps themselves are fitted correctly and they're fitted tightly. So I know sometimes that means people have got to come along about, you know, a couple of hours, 3 hours later to take them off, but the integrity of the short circuit device, and it's the short circuit clamp itself that protects all the guys and girls doing work out on the track. It's critical it's fitted right, it's tightened up correctly. So once the actual clamp has been fitted to the conductor rail, then you can take away the short circuit bar, because then we've actually got the short circuit strap fitted in that location. So that's really it in the summary. I think the key thing is remembering why we do short circuit strapping, and we do short circuit strapping because it's there as the means of protecting the workforce in the event of the conductor rail becoming live. Now there's two, very quickly, there's two ways that conductor rail can become live. One of those is with a train running into the electrical section. So yes, it's got to go past the blocking signal. Yes, it's got to go through the PLBs. Yes, it's got to run over the decks. But if it does all of that and then livens up that conductor rail, the short circuit strap will protect anyone working in that electrical section. Likewise, there are loads of processes to where the ECO, the electrical control room operator, actually protects the isolation through inhibiting those particular circuit breakers. And there is a very strong process that stops those circuit breakers being reclosed in error. But if one of those circuit breakers did get closed for whatever reason, then again the short circuit strap will protect the staff and the workforce out on site, trip the breaker out, and actually stop any other further reclosures. So that's why it's really important that they're fitted in the right place. It's really important that they are fitted correctly, and it's really important that the clamps themselves are really tight on the bottom, because it's that integrity that ensures the safety of people working in the worksite. So that's all. That's where it is in the summary, Ivan.
Sorry, I'll just open up Ivan's line again.
Okay.
Excellent. Thank you very much. That was fairly comprehensive, but I think it's really important that we talk through stuff and everybody. I mean, you have to be trained and competent to do it now, but it's good to have a reminder and all the stages. And what was really useful there, Nigel, was you saying why we do it, each bit of why we do that. That was really helpful. Thank you very much for that, Nigel. I don't know if anyone else has got any other comments about it, but each stage there's a reason for it. It's not just there for the fun of it or to make it difficult. It's there to protect us. It's a life-saving rule to test before touch and to make sure we've got those short-circuiting straps on. That's brilliant. I don't know if anyone else has got any other comments.
We do have one person. They haven't recorded their name, but please go ahead. You're live in the call.
Yes, it's Chris from Guildford. I didn't hear any mention of applying the short-circuit bar where only one rail carries traction return, in other words, where we have single-rail track circuits, especially as we still have a lot of single-rail track circuits where there is no shrouding or boarding, where the signal rail is adjacent to the juice rail. So what's Nigel have to say about that, if anything?
Okay, so one of the reasons that we clamp the two running rails together before we put the short circuit bar down is effectively it makes sure that the running rail adjacent to the conduct rail becomes a traction return rail. So in the examples that you've just said, if we hadn't have done that and put the short circuit bar down, effectively we're not causing a short circuit because it will only short circuit it to the track circuit rail, not traction return. So the key thing there is by actually clamping the two running rails together first with the two running rail clamps, it means then we've got a traction. We've converted, if you like, the track circuit rail into a traction return rail. And when we put the short circuit bar down, it will then effectively, if there was a problem, if that rail did become energized, it causes a short circuit to traction return.
And presumably where there is shrouding, people will be discouraged from trying to put the short circuit straps in those places.
That's correct. If there's no alternative, then it can be done. Ideally, it isn't done because to fit a short circuit strap in that location, you either have to take the guard boarding off or you have to take off the shrouding before you put the short circuit bar down. And there's two issues with that. First of all, it's the precautions you do when you're doing that, and secondly, remembering to refit it all at the end. So otherwise we end up with areas where the shrouding's not been restored or the guard boarding's not been restored afterwards.
Right. I'm glad you did emphasise about cleaning the rails and putting the straps on extremely tight, having witnessed many years ago experiments at Wimbledon and Waterloo with what actually happens. And as you said, they do physically just blow away from the rail. But a lot of people are of the opinion that it doesn't really matter. So I'm glad you have emphasised that.
Yeah, no, it is a really, really, really key part of it. When occasionally, you know, when I go out and I have a look and I talk to people doing strapping, it really is that understanding. There's two things. It's understanding exactly why we're doing the short circuit strapping, which is the defence or the mitigation for any reason the conrail becomes live and it stops people in the workforce being injured. That's the real, real key thing. And the second thing is then if they're loose for whatever reason and they do blow off, you're right. Every time there's a short circuit, there's quite a lot of mechanical force and a little explosive energy that will tend to blow off that short circuit strap. So if they're not tight, that's the sort of thing you get. And of course you see that to a little bit of a degree when you see arcing, you know, with trains coming off the end of the ramp end. It's not quite the same because it's different, but there is a lot of energy in the conduct rail system And if we don't fit the clamps properly and tightly, then that energy is used and it will effectively blow off the clamps.
Thank you.
Thank you. There are no further questions.
Okay, so we'll just have one last crawl round to see if anyone's got anything else they want to talk about, any other questions of anything we've talked about, and if not, then we'll close. So we'll just wait just for a couple of minutes just to see if there's any other questions, and if not, we'll wrap up and say thank you very much for attending.
Thank you. So let me just remind everyone, just press star, then one on your telephone, record your name and press the hash key. Thank you. We have somebody. Please go ahead. You're live in the call.
Hello, Nigel. It's Ian Gippier.
Hello, Ian.
Hi. Could you just clear up when the fitting is strapped to your conductor that's wrong, the short circuit strap to the conductor rail, what side the conductor rail should be connected to, i.e. the inside of the conductor rail close to the forefoot or the outside, please?
Right, okay, so the standard process is the once the short circuit bar is applied, is to apply the short circuit strap to the outside of the conductor rail. Okay, so it's on the side furthest away from the forefoot. What we are doing is carrying out some trials where we are fitting it on the inside, but that is only on very specific locations under trial conditions, and there are specific processes and competencies to do this, where the conductor rail clamp is fitted on the inside, on the forefoot side of the conductor rail. But there are some specific requirements for that. There are specific briefings that are required from that, and they only apply on those particular trial areas where we are using that process. Every other location, we need to fit the conductor rail clamp on the outside of the conductor rail.
Thank you.
Thank you. There's nothing else coming through, Nigel.
Okay. So can we close up then?
Thank you. So, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes your conference call for today. You may now disconnect. Thank you for joining. Have a very good day.